the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love, where we reflect on Swami's messages interspersed with soulful music from students and devotees from around the world. In today's session, we will look at the four stages of every devotee's evolutionary journey with Swami before we become one with the Cosmic One Himself. These are Chamatkar or Miracles, Samskar or Transformation, Paropakar, Selfless Service, and Sakshatkar or Self-Realization. Now, what is Chamatkar? Swami says very often, I give you what you seek so that one day you will seek what I have come to give. That simply put is Chamatkar, where Bhagwan in his munificent love for us performs miracles of varying degrees, be it taking over the disease of a primary school child, or saving a devotee from the jaws of death in the Bangalore Puttaparthi highway, or even simply giving a different prasadam in the Sai Kulwant hall just because one of his devotees asked for it. You know, each of us have come to Bhagwan in our own unique ways, and very often it has become a miraculous experience that pulled a family to Swami's fold. Swami calls these his visiting cards. By his definition, if we see, he drives home a valid point that miracles have their own succinent role in our lives. That visiting cards are meant to be a mere introduction, a gateway to the phenomenon that he is. And once we get to know the person, the visiting card plays no role. It is merely a means and not the end. It is merely a tool that plays a handy role in the journey of our love. A tool that let us stop in our tracks for a second. A tool that starts a mild spark, prompting the light in our hearts to burn bright. Professor Kasturi, in Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Volume 3, narrates a beautiful incident. Let's revisit that today. He says that one day when he arrived in Prashanti Nilayam, he found a group of young men from the Bangalore College praying to Swami to take them to the top of the hill on the left bank of the Chitravati River. They hoped that once they are there, Swami would, you know, pluck fruits of different species from that famous tamarind tree and reenact his childhood miracles. Professor Kasturi was very excited at the prospect of seeing that miracle, so he too joined in the appeal. Swami was silent and he was just listening to them, and suddenly he said, "Do I require that particular tree? Any tree will do." Now they were filled with hope. They thought, okay, even if Swami doesn't take them to that tamarind tree, probably Swami would walk up to any tree that is there in the Prashanti Mandir and then pluck out fruits of different species and thereby even make that tree immortal. But suddenly Swami said, "Why do you think I want a tree? Even sand is good enough." Now this meant that Swami would give them something from the Chitravati riverbed. So they were very excited. Okay, at least if not the tree, probably Swami will take us through to the Chitravati riverbed. Then Swami said, "Do I need the sands of a riverbed? Is not any sand equally good?" Now, since the building work was in progress in Prashanti Mandir, truckloads of sand had been heaped to one side. So Swami said, "Okay, now why not we sit here on this sand heap itself?" Now, then he said, "Do you think that creation of something out of sand is the only miracle? Is sand so essential for me to materialize anything?" Now, they were perplexed. None of them knew what to say. Then Swami waved his hand and materialized Vibhuti for them. And they felt, okay, maybe that's it. Possibly we just have to be satisfied by this miracle of getting some Vibhuti from Swami. But Swami continued saying, he said, "Should I create something so that you can see a miracle? Is not your existence itself a miracle of mine?" Then he just got up and walked away. And that left Professor Kasturi and all the students aghast at the revelation that here is the incarnation of the one universal God, the Creator. So dear listeners, Chamatkar or miracle has no role if he wishes to not give it any role. Swami often says that miracles are for nidarshana, that is establishing divinity, and not for pradarshana or exhibition. That is why he reminds us time and again in the middle of a creation, he would say, this was only a creation. So who is the creator? You know, Swami would say, you're all interested only in the creation and not the creator, thereby letting the mind leave the rein and letting our heart take its hold. Welcome back, dear listeners. Shivaratri in Prashanti would draw unbelievably huge crowds because of the incredible Vibhuti Abhishekam that Swami performed for the silver idol of Shirdi Sai and the Lingodbhavam that followed, both of these were miraculous events that no science could explain. You know, Swami says, the Vibhuti Abhishekam has a potent inner meaning that I want you to grasp. The Vibhuti is the most precious thing in the truly spiritual sense. You know that Shiva burnt and reduced to ashes Manmatha, the lord of desires or karma. Manmatha is the one who disturbs and agitates the mind, compounding the confusion that already exists in the mind. After destroying Manmatha, Shiva adorned himself with the ash, standing gloriously as the destroyer of desires. When desire is annihilated, love reigns supreme. When there is no desire to wrap the mind, love is seen in its pure form and in full bloom, unquote. You know, this reminds me of the May 1968 episode when Swami went to the princely state of Jamnagar in response to the prayers of the Prince Jam Sahib and his consort, who was popularly known as Rajmata. Swami arrived in Jamnagar from Bombay on 14th of May by a chartered plane, and on the following day left for Dwarka. Now the residents of Dwarka and Sai devotees from other towns had packed every inch of available space in the Krishna temple there long before Swami came. So while Bhagwan could easily enter the temple, those who accompanied him were pushed and crushed amongst the crowd. And seeing the plight of the devotees, Swami came out of the temple and just drove away. Now while returning to Jamnagar in the evening, they were passing by a beach, and Swami asked the car to be stopped. Now the party went to the beach, and after taking a stroll for some time, everyone sat down on the sands, and Swami then started to heap the soft sand to a height of about half a meter in front of him. Now everybody became very excited seeing that, because whenever Swami would do that, invariably he would put his hand in and bring out something. They were all waiting for the miracle to happen. Swami then flattened the heap and he drew some patterns on it, and he said, "It is ready." After that, he dug his hands deep into the pile of the sand and drew out a bright golden image of Krishna, approximately 25 centimeters in height. It was the image of Krishna playing the flute, and it was the very epitome of craftsmanship. Then Swami said, "You did not get the darshan of Krishna in the temple. Have it now." For devotees, it was a moment of supreme ecstasy. That is Bhagwan. He might be meticulous and elaborate in all preparations and events, but while performing a miracle, he might choose a silent evening hour. Because to Swami, Chamatkar is only phase one. Yet, he lets us know that he is always ready, waiting to attend on us.
Mukunda Murari Murari Gopal Mukunda Murari Murari Gopal Gopal Sai Sai Nandala Gopala Sai Sai Nandala Prashanti Nivasi Nivasi Nandala Prashanti Nivasi Nivasi Nandala Hem Karatma Jyoti He Jyoti Nandala Hem Karatma Jyoti It's okay, Nandala. ശിവം സുന്ദര സത്യം ശിവ ശിവം സുന്ദര സുന്ദര രൂപ സായി നന്ദല സുന്ദര രൂപ സായി നന്ദല
Serving all, giving and helping all, we need.
Welcome back, dear listeners. The chamatkar, the magic, the miracle, it has started working, making way to the second phase of our spiritual evolution, that is the samskar, culture or transformation of our hearts and lives. Swami says, samskar is hearty culture, that is culturing of our hearts. Refinement begins to happen. He makes us reflect on our lives. We slowly realize that all the answers lie within us. All the problems can be eradicated by looking within and learning from it. If chamatkar sowed the seed, samskar is culturing of the field. The dark and arid heart looks up to the light of love. And we all know how a work well began is half done, right? Likewise, this is the time in each devotee's life when Bhagwan sits back with a smile playing on his lips because he knows that his work has begun. Time and again, we have heard Bhagwan elucidating on this transformational process. If you look at a sculpted rock or gold or paddy, or any of these products goes through several phases of refinement before the desired pristine product emerges. That is very much what happens in each of our lives as we get our brows beaten. Now when we get sick, our mothers come to our bedside with a bitter kashayam or syrup. Knowing that we would throw a tantrum, she would add a bit of honey in front of our eyes to make it a bit more flavorful and palatable. All of us would have experienced it, right? So also our beloved Swami, who verily is the embodiment of love, who is the mother of all mothers, she wants to make this transformation process more enjoyable to each and every one of us. So he says, when a sculptor has to chisel a rock to make it bear the beautiful form of Lord Krishna, where do you think the Lord comes, Lord's form comes on the rock? From outside? No. The Lord Krishna's form was within the rock. All the sculptor does is chisel away the unnecessary pieces slowly and steadily, and the hidden idol of the Lord reveals itself in all its glory. Now all the other rocks might cry out in misery for not getting the same attention as the idol of Krishna, which now stands in the sanctum sanctorum for worship. Now what does the idol say? It says, "You and I are indeed one." But what keeps us apart is the transformational process. So dear listeners, what makes us worthy of worship is what remains of us after the work is done. So be willing to get away from the unwanted fragments. When that happens, all that remains is joy. So once our animal qualities wither away one by one, finally what is left of us is divinity itself. And yes, that is how we know we have come to the end of the samskar phase, when we reflect the Lord himself. When in us the image of the Lord is seen, we move on to the next phase.
See stand in a single-handed clasp, glimpsing the light in a fallen leaf, sensing its presence in the midst of my grief, feeling the one in the smile of a child, seeing its love flowing gentle and mild, praising God in all that I do, knowing the truth that it's in me and you. See God in each other, in a friend and enemy, a brother. See God in all its wonder. See God living as you. Feeling the one always close at hand, grasping a thought that God is who I am, touching the hearts of everyone I see, looking inside, being home with me, catching a song that's coming from within, giving up life based on fear and sin, seeking to know that which sets us free, releasing it all and coming back to be. See God in each other, in a friend and enemy, a brother. See God in all its wonder. See God living at you. Every time I let my heart be open and I watch God's love flow free, I look upon His creation, and God is all I can see. Every time I hear the voice inside me whisper who I am, I know I'm that child of splendor. With God I walk hand in hand, seeing His form floating through the crowd, revealing the light as He dispels the cloud, embracing His love as it captivates my soul, receiving the faith that I am now made whole, laying my life at the feet of this one, no longer concerned with what I am to become, finding it all here in the presence of sight. In order to live, I must be willing to die. See God in each other, in a friend and enemy, a brother. See God in all its wonder. See God living in you, living as you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Continuing further in the process of samskar or transformation, let us take the story of Bharata. You know, when Rama was in the 14-year exile period, even Bharata was in a self-imposed exile. He lived in a nearby village of Nandigram, worshipping Rama and serving being a servant of Rama and keeping the Padukas of Rama on the throne. So after that, after 14 years when Rama came back, Bharata's love for Rama was so much for that 14 years that not only inwardly, but his outward appearance had changed to align with the form of Lord Rama. You know, this is one of the exemplary examples of transformation that would happen when there is change in the mental makeup of the individual. Now, why go to a different yuga when there are exemplary stories of transformation in this very age? And why go far when tales of transformation has rung far and wide here in the state of Andhra Pradesh, and that too in a setting like no other? Yes, let's listen to an inspiring story of transformation from the Andhra Pradesh prison cell. Now, this is a story of Kalpagiri, but before we come to that, let me read a letter that one of the prisoners wrote to Swami, and I quote, "We are sinners, certainly, but our lives have become full of hope. Through some stray act of merit which we chance to do in some past life, for we have rendered ourselves fit to receive your grace. Really, if there are any who can be declared fortunate in the world, we are the ones. We are truly proud of this, that the stream of your mercy has started flowing towards these mean men who have injured society and who are suffering punishment is no ordinary event. We prayed that you should grant us your darshan and your blessings. You have written to us out of your vastness of your mercy that you will elevate us with your darshan, sparshan and sambhashan at Puttaparthi. The sage Narada blessed Savitri, on whose head the blow of widowhood has descended, with the statement, Dirkha Sumangali Bhava. And she was able to win her husband back from the dominion of death. We too have learned from Kalpagiri, whose death sentence was cancelled, that your word has come true. It knows no defeat." Unquote. So who is this Kalpagiri? Now, he was someone who committed a foul murder, but escaped the eye of the police and made his way to the Himalayas. He donned an ochre robe of a monk and wandered from one dharmashala to another, chanting the name of God. Now, he did this for 4 years, but wherever or whenever he met any saint or sage, he wondered if they too were wickedness packed in pious robes. In the process, he read many sacred books, discussed the role of bhakti, jnana, karma in releasing man from bondage, etc. And after a while, he decided that now it was quite safe to venture back into familiar regions of the south. So his pilgrimage now extended to the southern side. He came to Tirupati, Kanchi, Rameshwaram, Srirangam, Chamundi hills, etc. When he reached Bangalore, he heard of Puttaparthi. He was told a new Shiradi had emerged within the last 2 decades in this village of Puttaparthi. So he boarded the Guntakal train, he aligned at Penikonda, and then by a bus he reached Puttaparthi. Now, during darshan, Swami called this sannyasi in for an interview, and the all-knowing one that he is, Swami chided this man for running away from the consequences of his deed, which he could never accomplish successfully. Swami asked him, "Why postpone for another birth the suffering which you must undergo in return for the dire deed?" And then Swami went to his room and brought down some white clothes gave him and told him to remove the ochre robe and wear this. Swami then told him to go to the police station in his area and confess all his crimes. Swami also gave him 4 precious vibhuti packets. Swami told him, "Go confess your sins and cheerfully undergo whatever punishment is given to you. I promise that you will not be hanged. Your neck shall wear a japamala, which I shall myself put around it when you come to me after your sentence is over." These were the words of our Lord. So Kalpagiri decided to obey his command and save himself rather than discarding it and get caught up in this net of rebirth. So traveling in a train, he was going back to his place, and then he saw this person who was suffering in pain with him in the train. And so Kalpagiri thought, anyway, I have these four packets of vibhuti which was given by Sathya Sai Baba. Why not I try how efficient this vibhuti is by giving to this person? So he gave him some of the vibhuti that Swami had given him, and this person's pain disappeared. So this gave him more confidence that he should listen to Swami and go and confess all his sins to the police. So he went and confessed to the police, and then he was arrested and put in jail. And they started seeking presidential pardon for him. So now, Kalpagiri in his prison cell, he had few other prisoners with him. One of the person whose name was Chengappa. And he was telling these people, this Chengappa and other prisoners, about this story of how he went to Puttaparthi and how he met this person called Sathya Sai Baba, and how Sathya Sai Baba told him that I should go and confess my sins and I will not be hanged. Now, so finally, this mercy petition that was filed to the president, it bore fruit and he was given pardon. When that happened, all the other prisoners were eager to know from him the name and address and the glory and splendor of this Baba, so that they also can seek his blessings. So they got the address and they wrote to Swami in their own unsophisticated style for his blessings and his pictures and requesting for books about him. Now, letter one that I read a while ago was one of the letters that one of these prisoners wrote to Swami when he was in jail. Now, another letter read that, Swami, each letter that comes to us from Prashanti Nilayam is a blessing. Truly, it is as if Baba himself is before us and conversing with us. Now, before we move on to the next session, among those prisoners who clung to the divine feet from the moment Kalpagiri made divinity known inside the walls, this prisoner called Chengappa, he deserves a special mention, because for his letters reveal an intense yearning for spiritual realization. His letter goes thus. Now, in the beginning of this letter, he describes in detail, very graphically, the crimes he had committed, which I am intentionally skipping. In a nutshell, he kills his wife and tries to kill himself, but he fails and he lands in the hospital. So here is the rest of the letter. I quote, "I regained consciousness in the hospital to which the police had transported me. They stitched the ghastly wound and made me whole. Later, while I was confined in the Rajahmundry jail, they had to open the stomach again, and after some years, once again, in order to repair the damage done in the previous operations. The wonder was, I survived all these calamities. I surmised that God was guarding my life, for perhaps he had planned a good future for me, when I could do some work for him and for those whom he chooses. Therefore, I offered my body, heart and soul to God. I have since felt supremely happy, for I live every moment in the knowledge that I have the grace of God. The godly are my kith and kin. Sages are my dearest companions. I have lost all interest in my erstwhile kinsmen. I have secured you, Baba, Lord. Come on earth for such as I. What more do I need? I have placed your picture, the one you sent, before the seat which I use for dhyana. When I open my eyes, I see you. When I close my eyes, I recite your name. This is my nitya puja or daily worship. I practice the sadhana of being with you, in you forever. God for me and I for God. This is the thirst. This gives me limitless joy. I am happy that the doctors have prescribed for me uncooked greens and pulses soaked in water, for that is the sattvic food which helps the sadhaka to have his meditation unhampered by rajasic thoughts." Unquote. You know, when Swami wrote a letter to him encouraging him in his resolve, Chengappa further writes, "I placed the letter on my eyes, I pressed it on my heart, I was as happy as Sita must have been when Anjaneya placed in her hands the ring of Rama. It was Thursday, the silence day, when I could not communicate to my comrades the joy because I had read in the Sanatana Sarathi that you had recommended silence during Thursday. I read the precious words within myself. Ah, how fortunate I am. So the prisoners wrote to Swami for books and bhajans, for songs, for notebooks in which they could write, you know, they could do Likhita Nama Jap, etc. And also they would refer to their mother or children who they fear might be in distress. In such cases, Swami has actually sent money through post to the addresses mentioned. And when the addresses were found to be correct and the persons were known to be alive, he even dispatched clothes and other gifts by post with letters of consolation and encouragement to the relatives of these prisoners. So dear listeners, that was Swami's love for the distressed and downtrodden. He never judges us. He loves everyone, the sinner and the saint, equally. You know, Swami reconstructs man by revealing to each the Sai within him. Whether be it a prisoner within the high walls of a jail or within the high walls of the ego-built desire, he is the liberator, the watchful master who takes you as you are and leads you onto the joy of freedom. What a beautiful message from the Lord, and what a blessing it is to recount Sri Kasturi's words. Truly, his transformational tools lays a royal road to Swami's message of all are one, be alike to everyone. When one sees no difference in the world or in the beings around us, empathy and love makes way for the selfless sadhana. And this, dear listeners, leads us to the third phase of paropakar or selfless service. Welcome back, dear listeners. Now, coming to the third phase of paropakar or selfless service. You know, we have heard people say that at the end of it all, nobody is going to remember the school topper or a ruthless boss or the presidents of our country. But what we will remember is the love of those who touched us. Small acts of love can make a world of difference to the one who is receiving it. And each such act always has rippling effect across the world. Swami says, paropakarartham idam shariram. The very purpose of human life is to serve others. On one occasion, Bhagwan explained how one should serve others. He said, no benefit occurs from rendering service devoid of love. Do not expect any returns from your acts of service. The satisfaction that you derive from rendering service is itself a reward. But then there are several occasions, like in the following story, where Swami still chooses to shower his love for just our intentions. You know, Mr. Mayur Pandya, a former student of Swami's institute in Vrindavan, had a wonderful experience that taught him this valuable lesson. Once when Mr. Ram Brahmam, the then caretaker of Vrindavan Ashram, had some ailment, and seeing him suffer, Brother Mayur empathized with him. He silently prayed to Swami to relieve him of the pain. Few days later, Bhagwan spoke to Brother Mayur and told him to accompany Mr. Ram Brahmam to a doctor in Bangalore. And Mayur immediately agreed, for he was glad to render service. When they returned, Bhagwan inquired with him in detail about his visit and then blessed him with Pad Namaskar, but in a very unusual way. You know, when Brother Mayur was about to take Pad Namaskar, Bhagwan raised his feet very skillfully, such that Mayur's hands landed on the cushion instead of on Swami's feet. Bhagwan then immediately put his feet on Mayur's hands, and as Bhagwan's robe automatically covered his feet, nobody could see where Mayur's hands were. And Bhagwan kept pressing his feet in this manner for about 4 to 5 minutes over Brother Mayur's hands. Brother Mayur was absolutely overwhelmed at this special blessing. He realized that his empathy for Mr. Ram Brahmam and his spirit of rendering service to him had pleased Bhagwan so much, and this was Bhagwan's way of blessing Mayur and acknowledging it. Truly, dear listeners, hands that serve are holier than lips that pray. So Bhagwan says there are five aspects to rendering good quality service. And the first aspect is that service should be done with the feeling of oneness. Second, it should be done as an offering. That is, every act should be done as an offering to the Lord. Third aspect, it should be done with pure selfless love. Fourth aspect, it should be done silently, that is, without any publicity. And the fifth aspect is that the quality of the work done is more important than the quantity. So what happens when one engages in constant service? Now, it is said that the earth, heaven and sky form God's limbs. In him are set the waters, the 33 million gods and all of us. And because of that oneness and the one Atma that unites us, when we extend our service and fill the hearts and minds and stomachs of our fellow man, Atma Tripti or self-satisfaction springs forth. For aren't we all one? You know, it's like when one eye is hurt, the other one shed a tear. When the tummy murmurs out of hunger, the hands work to satiate the hunger. Now, likewise, this constant habit to satiate and stand for the world helps in slowly removing the veil of illusion. That is all important phase then takes us to the realization that him and we are no different. We see the oneness that we are all in him, in us, and everything else that surrounds us. Thus, this welcomes the stage of Sakshatkar or self-realization. Welcome back, dear listeners. Bhagwan says man minus ego is God. That simply put is sakshatkar or self-realization. Seek that which when known, nothing else remains unknown. That is self-realization, which we finally attain after journey of several births. Bhagwan also says ahamkar is aham plus akar, that is, I am this form, while sakshatkar is sakshat plus akar, that is, my true form. As one attains this final phase in their journey, as the jivatman identifies with the paramatman, it now takes up tasks for loka kalyan, thus benefiting the whole world at large. This end result is what Swami expects when he says, I give you what you seek so that one day you will seek what I have come to give. Bhagwan says that this entire universe arises from the mind. Mano moolam idam jagat. Therefore, all the problems that arise in the world are ultimately related to the mind. The only aspect that separates a human being from his own truth or from God is his mind. Let's now listen to a talk that was given by Sri Rangarajan, the director of the Vrindavan campus of Sri Satisai Institute of Higher Learning in the Divine Presence in the year 2007. This talk is titled The Cosmic Lion's Roar, where he talks about Bhagwan's wake-up call in our path to self-realization.
I offer my pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Respected elders and my dear brothers and sisters, Bhagwan says, Mano Moolam Idam Jagat, which means the whole world is based on the mind. In fact, mind also happens to be the first letter of the word manager. Bhagwan expands, M stands for mind. And since the whole world is based on the mind, all the problems related to the world are also because of the mind. If we were to think deeply, all religious practices, all spiritual practices, be it the karma marga, the bhakti marga or the jnana marga, have all got just one purpose, and that is mastery of the mind to turn it inwards so that we may realize our true divine self. If this is the purpose of all spiritual practices, if mind is the cause for all the bondage and liberation of man, then obviously the purpose for which the Lord comes down in the human form is also the same, to transform man by turning his mind inwards. How does Bhagwan do this? Once a devotee asked Swami, said, Swami, you say the whole world is based on the mind and so it is like a dream. But Swami, you have taken a human form and you are also in this dream. So are you not part of the dream? Bhagwan smiled and said, yes, I am part of the dream, but I am like a roaring lion in this dream, and my roaring will wake you up from your sleep into your own reality. How does this cosmic lion roar? The roar is not like the way the lion roars, but it could be in the form of a dream, a smile, a look, a word, even a whisper, and even his silence. Let me take recourse to a few conversations which I have been privileged to have with Bhagwan, and also which I have heard in the last few years at his lotus feet, and see how Bhagwan takes us through this inward journey. The most common conversation that I have heard between Bhagwan and a devotee is, Swami asks, where have you come from? And invariably every devotee says, Swami Canada, Swami Mumbai se aaya, Swami Delhi. But then the same question goes on again and again. Every day Bhagwan would come and ask devotee, where have you come from? And then we start wondering, what's happening, Swami? Do you not know where have I come from, and why are you asking the same question again and again? And thus begins the inward journey of our mind. And we start wondering, hey, what's wrong with my answer? And that is how Swami leads us to this inward journey. We all know that the most appropriate answer to this would be, Swami, I have come from you. We have heard many devotees give this answer and we find a blissful smile on Swami's face. So when I discovered this truth, I got prepared. I said, okay, in case the situation arises, I will win it. And it did arise. One evening I was sitting in the mandir. Swami came walking, stopped in front of me. Hey boy, where have you come from? I knelt down with pride, for I was prepared for this test, and I said, Swami, I have come from you. But I didn't see any blissful smile on Swami's face. There was a frown. He was apparently irritated and he said, that is different, sir. Which place have you come from? The message is, Bhagwan does not want us to speak the answer from the tip of our lips, but it must be an experience which comes out of deep self-inquiry. Another common conversation which Bhagwan normally has with a devotee, who are you? I still remember decades back, we all students were seated here. It was the old mandir, and Swami, as he walked like this, just cut across the students, which he would do very common it was. And he was walking between us just here. I was on the pathway and just opposite to me was a student of the MSc Maths class. Swami was floating. You know, he doesn't walk. He just floats. And he stood right in front of the student and he asked, who are you? We all sort of started looking at that student and we smiled because we were not the target of Bhagwan's question. We felt very comfortable. And this boy was dumbfounded. He never expected this question. And Swami smiled, patted on his cheek. Believe me, brothers and sisters, I still remember those words. He said with such natural spontaneity, you are God. And he just walked by. It was as natural as I would see this mic and say, this is a mic. That is how Bhagwan sees the whole universe. For Swami, the entire universe is just one and there is no two. But when we see Swami in this human form, we often get deluded. And therefore Bhagwan reminds us that I come down in a human form, play with you, talk with you, laugh with you, make you feel comfortable. But at the same time, Swami rises to supreme heights in order that A, we remember his reality, and B, he takes us up along with him. For we students, it was a very common experience to see how Swami mingles with all the boys, makes us feel so comfortable as though he's our dearest friend. And then suddenly, with one word or one remark, he would remind us of his majestic truth and reality. Long back, there was a student in the first year undergraduate class from Delhi. He was the son of a temple priest, a very sincere and dedicated seeker of truth. His only purpose was, Swami, I want the grace of self-realization from you. When he would come and talk to we teachers, we would tell him, brother, this is not an overnight miracle. You have got to struggle for it. You cannot ask Swami and just get it. But one evening, the boy was seated right here in the passage where Bhagwan would come for darshan. He was right at that corner. And a few rows behind him, I was seated. Bhagwan came out for darshan. And as Swami approached the student's block, this boy knelt down and was pleadingly trying to say something. I was shocked. Normally a student is not allowed to kneel down unless Swami gives an indication. So I was worried, what will this boy ask? How will Swami respond? But by then Swami had reached him and this boy loudly, without any sense of hesitation or shyness, said, Swami, I want self-realization. Our heart stopped. We couldn't do anything. We were glued to our seats. We said, what will happen, Swami? Swami came close to that boy. Brothers and sisters, he replied with the same loudness that the boy had asked. Swami said, I will give you Tell me, brothers, who else other than the Supreme Lord can dispense self-realization just like this, like you distribute chocolates? Only Swami can do it. Only Swami can do it. This was a real jolt to our mind, one of those roarings of the cosmic lion. And the mind turned inwards to understand, who is Swami? Several years back, it was Trayi Brindavan, the Whitefield campus. Swami was explaining to all of us, what is the meaning of a devotee? Swami said, how can you all claim that you are my devotees? I have to certify to that effect. You saying that I am your devotee is not as important as I saying that you are my devotee. And then Swami went on to explain that first a devotee must express to Bhagwan, Swami, I am yours. And Swami beautifully described that this is like a registered letter which you send to God. Not an ordinary registered letter, but a registered letter with an acknowledgement due. And then Bhagwan must say, yes, you are mine. And that is like the receipt which we get for our registered letter. Only then the relationship is complete. This really touched me. And it got embedded in my heart. When the interview got over, Swami went around all of us distributing vibhuti packets. Again, one of those beautiful conversations came up to me, and like an ideal teacher who sets an examination the moment he has covered the syllabus, Bhagwan asked, who are you? I was very happy. I knelt down and said, Swami, I am your son. Immediately Swami replied, please listen with very careful attention, because this is one of those roarings of the cosmic lion which starts your journey inward. Bhagwan said, no. Don't say I am your son. Son bhi ho sakta hai, daughter bhi ho sakta hai. Say, I am yours. The message was very clear. Swami wanted us to rise to the level of the Atma, where there is nothing like male and female. These are all attributes of the body. He wanted the mind which is making that answer to keep the Atma as its reference point and not the perishable and the impermanent body. This is the way Bhagwan slowly prods us inwards. Yet one more wonderful example. Venue, Brindavan College Auditorium. Occasion, the summer course. Bhagwan had just delivered the divine message on the valedictory day. And at the end, Swami materialized a beautiful diamond swan. He related it to the mythological story of Nala and Damayanti. But the more joyous part was, Swami came down from the stage. This is something which students should listen, because many of you may not know how Swami showers love on students. He came down from the stage, and we remember he walked across every row of chairs holding the swan in his hand for all of us to see. Do you realize the Lord of the universe walking in an auditorium between every row of chairs, which even we do not do? But would Swami not use this opportunity to roar? Impossible. When he came close to our row, he for a small pause of time, period of time stood there, and all of us craned towards that wonderful diamond swan. This was the most opportune moment. When all of us were looking at it, Swami suddenly withdrew the swan. So all of us turned our neck towards Bhagwan, and you know what he said? Adi creation ra, who is the creator? He said, all of you are getting lost in the creation. Who is the creator? It was like a bolt from the blue, and the mind did a somersault, went back inwards to feast on this beautiful, beautiful statement that Swami had made, reminding us who he is. It's a very tough job for Bhagwan. He keeps on prodding us to turn our mind inwards, and as a particular bhajan goes, you take 2 steps forward and we take 4 steps backward. He prods us to go inwards, and every time we pull the mind outwards and let it loose among the temptations of the world. And Bhagwan himself has said, I alone know the agony of teaching you every step of the dance. How do we give our love and gratitude to such a great, such a lovely and such a loving God? Simple. Help Him to facilitate this process. The journey may be painful, there may be many thorns and stones, but do not complain. Is it not only after the hammering and the heating and the twisting that the gold is transformed into an attractive jewel? Do we all not want to be instruments in the hands of Bhagwan? Let's not complain. Let's facilitate the process and walk along with Him in this inward journey. One more of those cosmic roarings. Second year MBA students had the privilege of having an interview with Bhagwan, very common in those days. I was in my second year MBA and we all were seated in the interview room and Swami was, He had already drowned us in His love. We were totally at the bottom of the ocean of His love. Towards the end, as usual, we all prayed, Swami, please make me your instrument. Swami, please make us your instrument. Swami, please make us your instruments. And Bhagwan says, yes, that's my duty, sir. That's my duty. And then pointing to each one of us, He said, you're my instrument. You're my instrument. You're my instrument. And then pointing at His own body, Bhagwan said, this is also my instrument. Our hearts stopped. We said, Swami, if that is also your instrument, who are you, Swami? Who are you, Swami? Bhagwan is that cosmic self. Bhagwan is that I in each one of us. And He is revealing Himself to all of us. Just one more roaring of the lion and I will conclude. This happened right here. Just here. The students used to sit those days and one of my classmates was seated near the pillar just behind me. It was those days when before evening bhajans, for around 15 minutes, there would be a flute recital. The flute had just begun playing. Swami came floating out. Again came to this classmate of mine and luckily I was close by. And when Swami wants to give a message, He makes sure that all the people who need the message are close by. So I was there and then Swami looked at this classmate of mine, stood for some time waving His hand and then He asked him, where is this sound coming from? The boy knelt down. He said, Swami, he pointed at the Bose speaker which is connected on the pillar and he said, Swami, speaker is there. You know what Bhagwan said? Speaker is outside. The real player is inside. Of course, the literal meaning is the flute player actually plays from inside the bhajan hall. But what Bhagwan meant was, body is just the instrument. Who is the doer? He's sitting right next to us, right in front of us. He is the eternal doer. Brothers and sisters, the earlier we embark on this journey, the better it is for all of us. Why? Swami has given the answer. And believe me, this is not a roaring of a lion. This is an atomic explosion. And if nothing has woken us up, this has to wake us up. Venue, Prashanti Nilayam Bhajan Hall. Occasion, a very unique surprise divine discourse by Bhagwan to teachers of the Mudanhalli school. And privileged to be present were also the Prashanti Nilayam hostel teachers. We were seated inside and Bhagwan was giving a discourse on the Mahabharata story. The episode was where Lord Krishna reveals the quote unquote bitter truth to Karna that actually he is one of the Pandava brothers. We had heard this story narrated by Bhagwan earlier and so we were waiting for more details of the Mahabharata story. But suddenly at this point Bhagwan stopped and gave a total twist to the story. Please listen with rapt attention because I've never heard Swami saying this again. Bhagwan said, do you know how sad Karna felt when he came to know that he was one among the Pandava brothers, that he had hurt them, caused so much harm to them? Swami said, one day each one of you will realize that there is none other than you. All are your own reflections. That day, you too will feel this immeasurable pain in your heart that all this while you fought against yourself, you caused harm to your own self. To avoid that situation, go inwards now and realize the truth that there is only one. These words are really impressed in my heart and I can never forget it. Concluding my talk, I would like to say, as Bhagwan says, Mano Moolam Idam Jagat. The whole universe is based on the mind. So all the problems of the universe which you talk of today, be it violence, terrorism or environmental damage, whatever it is, has only one solution. The mind, when turned outwards, sees diversity in unity. And when the mind turned inwards, sees the grand unity in diversity. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayoho. This is what Bhagwan says, that mind is a very beautiful instrument of God. In fact, when one devotee mentioned, Swami, this is a monkey mind, please Swami help me, Swami was very upset. He said, what do you mean by saying it's a monkey mind? Only Bhagwan has the privilege to say that. Swami said, it is a very pure mind. It is the mind given to you by God. And it has got the greatest power to either bind you or liberate you. The choice is ours. The only way to have a world, to have a nation, to have a society where there is harmony, where there is peace, where there is love, is to understand this fundamental truth, which is the only and the main purpose, if I may say, for the descent of the avatar. I will conclude just by reminding all of us what Lord Sai stands for. S-A-I. See always inside. Sai Ram.
Wake up now, my children, wherever you are. Wake up now, my children, and see who you are. It's time to wake up now, you've slept for so long. It's time to wake up now and sing me a song. It's time to wake up now and sing me your song. Sai Ram, Sai Ram. It's time to wake up now and sing me your song. A new day is dawning, a new day is here. Give up all your worries, give up all your fears. That's why I've awakened you, the reason I came. Surrender your troubles and sing out my name. Surrender your troubles and sing out my name. Sai Ram, Sai Ram. Surrender your troubles and sing out my name. Open your eyes now and see the light. Open your eyes now, the end is in sight. Come now, my children, and set yourselves free. Come now, my children, and merge into me. Come now, my children, and merge into me. Sai Ram, Sai Ram. Come now, my children, and merge into me. Wake up now, my children, wherever you are. Wake up now, my children, and see who you are. It's time to wake up now, you've slept for so long. It's time to wake up now and sing me your song. It's time to wake up now and sing me your song. Sai Ram, Sai Ram. It's time to wake up now and sing me your song. Sai Ram.
Welcome back, dear listeners. And so it begins and so it ends. Each story, each life, each Janma, they all have different accounts. But the love of the Lord for His devotees remains the same. From Chamatkar to Sakshatkar, from the many to the one, to that edifice of our lives, to that one without the second. I offer this program as I end with a prayer. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy, happy and happy. Stay tuned at 3:30 p.m. We will have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari, hosted by Brother Ganesh. Until I see you next week, Jai Sai Ram.